Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila, chapter 14, and we're dealing with texts 30 to 32, but actually we're going to deal with texts 30 to 37, because then it finishes the story. Otherwise, it's strange. And Prabhuji here is Bengali, so he's going to chant the verse, because otherwise you would have to hear my tortured Bengali. It's not worth it. He's the man. So all the translations and purports are, of course, by Srila Prabhupada. Astonished that the child was speaking Mayavada philosophy, Mother Satchu replied, "Who has taught you this philosophical speculation that justifies eating dirt?" I'm sure you all remember the previous verses. This is the difficulty of starting and stopping in the middle of a story. But if you don't, I think we get the gist. Purport. In the philosophical discourse between the mother and son, obviously Mother Satchi and Lord Chaitanya, when the son said that everything is one, as impersonalists say, the mother replied, "If everything is one, why do people in general not eat dirt, but eat the food grains produced from the dirt?" Text 31. Replying to the Mayavada idea of the child philosopher, Mother Satchi said, "My dear boy, if we eat dirt transformed into grains, your body is nourished and becomes strong. But if we eat dirt in its crude state, the body becomes diseased instead of nourished, and thus it is destroyed." Text 32, which is what we have here. "In a water pot, which is a transformation of dirt, I can bring water very easily. But if I poured water on a lump of dirt, the lump would soak up the water, and my labor would be useless." Purport. This simple philosophy propounded by Satchimata, even though she is a woman. I don't think Prabhupada means that badly. We can come back to that. Can defeat the Mayavad philosophers who speculate on oneness. The defect of Mayavad philosophy is that it does not accept the variety that is useful for practical purposes. Satchimata gave the example that although both the lump of dirt and the earthen pot are basically one, for practical purposes the water pot is useful, whereas the lump of dirt is useless. Sometimes scientists argue that matter and spirit are one, with no difference between them. Factually, in a higher sense, there is no difference between matter and spirit. But one should have practical knowledge that matter, being an inferior state, is useless for our spiritual blissful life, whereas spirit, being a finer state of existence, is full of bliss. In this connection, the Bhagavatam gives the example that dirt and fire are practically one and the same. From the earth grow trees, and from their wood come fire and smoke. Nevertheless, for heat we can utilize the fire but not the earth, smoke, or wood. Therefore, for the ultimate realization of the goal of life, we are concerned with the fire of the spirit, but not the dull wood or earth of matter. Text 33. The Lord replied to his mother, "Why did you conceal self-realization by not teaching me this practical philosophy in the beginning?" Purport. If one is taught from the beginning of life the Vaishnava philosophy of duality or variety, the monistic philosophy will not very much bother him. In reality, everything is an emanation from the Supreme Source, Janmadyasya Yataha. The original energy is exhibited in varieties, exactly like the sunshine. The original energy emanating from the sun, which acts as light and heat in variety. One cannot say that light is heat and heat is light, yet one cannot separate one from the other. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is achinta bheda bheda, inconceivable non-separation and distinction. Therefore, there is an affinity between the two physical manifestations, light and heat. There is a difference between them. Similarly, although the whole cosmic manifestation is the Lord's energy, the energy is nevertheless exhibited in varieties or manifestations. Text 34. Now that I can understand this philosophy, I shall no more eat dirt. Whenever I am hungry, I shall suck your breast and drink your breast's milk. After saying this, the Lord, smiling slightly, climbed on the lap of his mother and sucked her breast. Thus, under various excuses, the Lord exhibited his opulence as much as possible in his childhood, and later, after exhibiting such opulences, he hid himself. So we'll stop there, text 36. I think that ends that section. Om Gina Timurandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yana Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Isn't that a lovely little story? And when we hear about Mayavad philosophy, generally our eyes cloud over and we think there's some medieval discussion going on about philosophy that is not really relevant to us. And we're not going to end up climbing onto someone's lap to suck their breast, so what are we going to do with this? But there's one very, apart from, I mean, it's very simply put how Satchimata puts it, is very straightforward. Prabhupada says here, the defect of Mayavad philosophy is that it does not accept the variety that is useful for practical purposes. So it's not actually practical. You can't do anything with it effectively. That's a very telling sentence. It seems like a very simplistic explanation for what we have heard. Sounds very philosophical, the light and the heat, they are one, but actually they're separate, and we have to understand. But this actually gets to the heart of the matter. What is the issue with Mayavad philosophy? And, you know, we hear it, and there's a Pavlovian response in devotees, Mayavad philosophy, psst, you know, evil, evil. But what is actually the issue? How is it practical in our lives today? And this is the issue, that it is not practical. The philosophy itself is not practical. You can't do something with it. You can only not do something with it. So you can become detached, but that's not a thing you do. That's something you don't do. Neti, neti, not this, not this, not this. It's negative in its approach. It's not a positive. And it's not, as Prabhupada says here, it's not that Lord Chaitanya doesn't understand the issue of oneness. In fact, Prabhupada says, scientists say that, you know, matter and spirit are one. And he says that, well, on a higher level of understanding, this is actually true. So that's a bold statement to make for someone, you know, hang on, has Prabhupada become a Mayavadi? No, our philosophy is a chinta bheda bheda tattva. It's simultaneously one with and different from. It's both. The heat and the light are the same energy. But the heat is useful for us. The light is useful in another way. But if we want to get warm, it's the heat we go for. If you want illumination, it's the light we go for. Same energy, different manifestations. So what's practical? It depends what you're looking for. So how is this? What is the impracticality by propounding this philosophy or living this philosophy? How does it become impractical, or what does that impractical mean in real terms? If we take the idea, for instance, of personalism, so that's our antidote to Mayavad. We talk about personalism. But if we just look at that simple idea, it's a very simple idea. It's endemic in Indian culture, personalism. Everything is personalized. Mountains, Govardhan, rivers, Yamuna, Ganga, they're people. You know, we don't urinate in rivers because there are people involved. You don't urinate on top of someone. Trees are personal. Kalpa Vriksha trees in Vrindavan. You go around, you say prayers at those trees. You don't harm them. You don't scratch your name in. Shonika was here, 2017. You know, we don't think like that. Why? Because it's a person. Everything is personal. So it's not just that the person is in the murti form. The person is everywhere. All these trees are people. Our house plants are people. The geese outside, for all the stool they offer to the Lord, are people. So how do we treat them? We treat them like people. That means you can actually practice ahimsa. Because you've personalized everyone, then it's more difficult to harm them. It's more difficult to harm the hills. It's more difficult to harm the rivers, the forests. We cut down the forests. We bore into the hills to get out our minerals and our stone and etc. You know, the Yamuna is considered by the UN to be a dead river once it passes Delhi. There's so much affluent chemicals going in. It's considered a dead river. It's not considered a living space anymore because we don't care. Because it's not the Yamuna for these people. It's not a person. When we depersonalize, we can cause harm. We can be cruel. We can be violent. This was exactly the philosophy of the Nazis. Josef Goebbels, their propaganda minister, said, give a dog a bad name, then hang him. And that's exactly what they did with the Jews. That was their policy. You identify the problem, the Jews, the gypsies, the homosexuals, the Jehovah's Witnesses. If we would have been around, it would have been the Hare Krishnas. And then once you've identified the problem and everyone stands back from the problem, once you've depersonalized them as a problem, not as people anymore, then you can do whatever you like. Such a civilized culture was able to kill men, women, and children in the millions without even thinking about it because we had depersonalized them. But we do this every day. We depersonalize others every day, even ourselves. Someone causes us difficulty and then we identify them as the problem. And they're not a person anymore, capable of change. They're someone to be removed from the equation. We can only cause them harm. We can only be cruel when we depersonalize them, when they don't have a story, when they're not also an eternal servant of Krishna. Every goose is an eternal servant of Krishna. Every tree outside is an eternal servant of Krishna. Every houseplant we don't water is suffering because of us. Because we've depersonalized them, it's only a houseplant. Once we start giving names to things like that, we're doing that, we're depersonalizing. It's very profound. And we're making it impractical. So our relationship with them becomes a non-relationship. It's not necessary to have a relationship. It's not a profound thing. It's not important anymore. Now, we can say, well, ahimsa, that's for Gandhi. That's not for us. It is for us. Krishna talks about it in the Bhagavad Gita, the first item of knowledge, ahimsa, or amanitva. It's ahimsa. So and it's said regularly. Now, it's a very strange place to stick ahimsa on a battlefield to make it an issue. How is Arjuna going to be not cruel? How is he, you know, Arjuna's problem is that he's personalized everyone in the wrong way. He says, oh, these are all my relatives and all, and Krishna says, no. These are relationships that we have and we come together and we go and we come together and we go. They're not the most profound relationships you'll ever have. They're not where you're going to find happiness and bliss, which is what you're actually looking for. So how does he deal with ahimsa? So Arjuna doesn't go into the fight thinking friends and enemies. He goes into the fight thinking, I have to do my duty. And then he does it with ahimsa. He's not cruel to anyone. He takes everyone into account as a person. Everyone still is a person. Their personhood is intact. So how do we enact anything in this world? Do we do it impersonally by saying you're a difficulty, therefore you have to be fired, and then we just fire them without any consideration for the person involved, without any priti, which is another principle in the Bhagavad Gita, affection? How can we be affectionate to something that's not a thing, to a person that's not a person, or a lesser person, someone who's just a karmi? That's a label we stick on people, which means we can be cruel to them. We can say, you're just a karmi. we've diminished them immediately, elevated ourselves in doing so, which means we can't be kind to them. We've debarred kindness. It becomes impractical. Amanitva, humility. We say that in Trinadapi, Sunichina, Tururapi, Sahichina, Amanina, Madanina. Amanitva, this word, to offer all respect to others. How do we do that if we've depersonalized people? We can't be humble. Once we say you're a karmi, we've elevated ourselves. There's no humility in that approach. We may be correct, but to treat someone like that, and how much of a karmi are we? How much, when we chant Hare Krishna, do we want to go back to Godhead, which is only a fruit of desire? Nadanam najanam nasandaram kavitam va jagadisha kame janmani janmani janmanishvare. Life after life, let me take birth so I can be your servant. That means Lord Chaitanya is giving up the idea of going back to Godhead. He's giving up the idea of salvation out of love for Krishna so that I can serve you. Whatever it takes to serve you. So whatever it takes to serve Krishna, that's the mood that Lord Chaitanya is trying to get across. That's very personal. Not considering ourselves. So we call people karmis to diminish them, to elevate ourselves, but we're not elevated. Because we still have this karmi thing. Let me go back to Godhead. We chant for a purpose. We want something. And Krishna says that's okay. Akamak savakamova mokshakama udarati tirena bhakti yogena yajeti purushamparam. Whether we're without desire, whether we're full of desire, whether we're absolutely liberated from desire, it doesn't matter. Come to me. And what do you want? I want to be happy. When? Now, right here, in this body. Oh. Well, let's do some service first. Let's do some kirtan, etc. And that's the end of our material life as we start to do it. And we begin to transform, we begin to change. And as we go on in devotional service, we let go all kinds of material desires and other big material things start to loosen up. We're not as attached. The possibility of maybe giving it up is beginning to become a thing. And that is what it means to be a person, to have a personal relationship. It's an ongoing process. And the more we realize it, the more Krishna becomes a person to us, the more we become a person to us, the more we can actually live with ourselves. We realize who we are. We're not the body. We're not the mind. We're not the part of us that says, you can't do it, you're an idiot, you're ugly, you're fat, you're old, whatever it's saying. We're not that. Our self-esteem, our self-confidence comes from our person. We are eternal servants of Krishna. An eternal servant of Krishna is a very empowered person. More powerful than the sun. The sun is a material thing. We're not a material thing. We're more powerful than that. Personhood realizes who we are. If we accept this philosophy of oneness, it's all one, etc., etc., then we debar our relationship with Krishna. We diminish our choice. We don't have the choice of love. We can't love Krishna because Krishna and Radha and Ram Sita and Lakshmana and Gaurinathayana, it's all one. You can say any prayer to anyone, it doesn't really matter. You can say a prayer to one of the flowers in the garland, it's the same. So what's the point of developing a relationship? Developing a relationship takes time. We have to put time and energy into it. I like Krishna. I like developing my relationship with Krishna. I like Krishna's interactions with me. I don't want that not to be the case. When we read the Krishna book and just his interactions with devotees, it's just so wonderful. When we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, the interactions of the devotees with each other, it's just so wonderful. It's enlivening. Inspires us. You see them exhibiting amanitva, humility. Choice. Giving each other choice. Krishna gives Arjuna choice. At the end of the Gita, he says, deliberate now on everything I've said, then do what you wish to do. He gives him choice because Arjuna has choice, eternally has choice. Krishna doesn't take his choice away. It's the Bhagavad Gita, it's the song of God. He could just say, do it now. Quick, quick, quick. Jello, do it. He gives him the choice. He says, do what you wish to do, because then Arjuna can choose to fight. And why did he choose to fight? Not on a philosophical basis, not on a theological basis, not on a cultural basis, not on a family basis. He chose to fight because he loved Krishna. He chose to fight because of his affection for Krishna. That's the powerful message of the Gita. It's a personal relationship was established, and it can only be established when we give choice. What a teaching method to help us understand how to teach or how to preach, how to deal with our children, how to deal with in our relationships. It's very elevated to be able to give someone choice, to give them that freedom. That's a relationship that comes out of a place of concern and care. And as Krishna says to Arjuna, priti, affection. We can't have that if it's all one. We can't have that relationship with Krishna where we can surrender and develop that mood of surrender and feel the reciprocation. It's a tangible relationship. It's a real relationship. Every devotee has had some mystical experience of, you know, reciprocation from Krishna where it's just so obvious. So we debar ourselves from having that. We diminish our choice. And that's not the example that we're given in the Gita. Krishna gives choice. He opens up the possibility. If we diminish it, we're diminishing ourselves. We're diminishing our pool of knowledge, our capacity to be happy. And that's ultimately what we're looking for. And we shouldn't be ashamed about that. We just celebrated the day of Lord Nityananda. Nityananda, eternal bliss. That we want to be part of that eternal bliss. That is a good desire. That's not material happiness, that's real happiness. So we should own it and really want it. How do we get eternal bliss? We can't get it by a negative, we get it by a positive. There's no idea of service in Mayavad philosophy. They're my thoughts on this verse. I have nothing else to say. Krishna, Krishna. Has anyone got any questions or answers or qualifications or comments or more intelligent things that I said?